Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Frank Chaparro, Director of Special Projects at The Block, and I'm very excited to have on the other side of the mic a return guest and a fellow enjoyer of lemonade, Mr. J.W. Verrett, corporate securities attorney. Professor, sir, thanks so much for joining the program again. When we had you on over the summer when I was in Prague, we were talking about lawsuits that were being waged against centralized crypto trading platforms. And then yesterday we learned that the SEC had issued a Wells notice against decentralized crypto trading protocol, Uniswap, or at least the sort of operating entity behind it known as Uniswap Labs. You know, we don't know a lot, JW. We only know that this Wells notice is out. That's why we're only going to take a, 20 or 30 minutes to unpack it. But given what we've seen from Uniswap, I mean, I'm sure, first things first, I'm sure you're not surprised. We can maybe start there. And then secondly, and we can maybe move into this part of it, what do you think the contention is that the SEC is going to make? And how similar and different might it be from the suits that we saw against Coinbase and Binance? It's a lot to unpack, so we can... I'll put the ball in your court to sort of figure out where to begin the conversation.
One of the things I admire most about how Coinbase handled their Wells notice was, unlike every other company I've ever seen that keeps it quiet and goes and begs the SEC not to sue them, Coinbase put it up on a website and said, ta-da, we just got this and we're going after these guys. I admire the sand inside of Armstrong and Grewal to do that. Uniswap hasn't released the Wells notice yet, so we don't know quite yet what kind of claims are percolating there. But it's going to look something like prior cases. There are two good cases we can use to try to read tea leaves. And they're not good for the SEC. The Coinbase wallet dismissal in the SEC's case has a lot of similar facts here. I mean, Uniswap does more than what Coinbase wallet does. But still, it's certainly going to be cited pretty heavily by Uniswap. And then there's the class action dismissal of a suit against Uniswap last year. That's going to be really useful. And between those two, I feel like Uniswap has a fighting chance. It's hard to beat City Hall, but I feel like Uniswap has a fighting chance.
If we were to sort of think about what maybe the claim would be, or the charges if a suit were to sort of come to fruition, it would probably be something along the lines of that they're operating as an unregistered broker-dealer or something like that, similar to what we saw with the Coinbase wallet aspect of that suit.
It would be operating as an unlicensed broker-dealer, which would be very similar to the finding in Coinbase wallet that the Coinbase wallet is not operating as a broker-dealer because it doesn't take custody of your property at any point. Or it could be operation of an unlicensed exchange, which was one of the claims in the Uniswap class action that was dismissed. Or it could be unregistered sale of securities, which is another claim that was dismissed in the Uniswap class action.
So when you think about the dismissal of the Coinbase wallet aspect of that suit, what was the logic, what was the reasoning, and what might be relevant to this situation?
Well, it was just 4 pages at the very end of the opinion. So it was very brief, but it focused on the fact that the Coinbase wallet, when using Coinbase wallet, a user maintains custody of their funds at all points. So you would think that would carry over to an SEC action against Uniswap. You would think that the reasoning in the Uniswap class action dismissal would carry over, that they're not operating as an exchange because all they do is operate a front end, and maybe they're significant liquidity providers, but the underlying protocol itself is autonomous and decentralized. The Judge Fela, in that opinion, really took an amazing amount of time to understand the tech. I mean, for a boomer judge, she must have had a clerk that was really into crypto, I think, because that was a good opinion, a thorough, well-considered. If the, the SEC's obviously read that, and they're going to try to get around it, how are they going to try to do that? I think the strategy for the SEC, what they're going to try to do is say, no, 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 you should treat as the same individual, you know, the lab and the protocol and the relayer, and just kind of consolidate all that together into one thing, and then say that is the unlicensed exchange, and use the new language in the new Reg ATS they just adopted this year to say you're operating an unlicensed exchange. And by the way, we've expanded the definition of an exchange with a new regulation. It's funny how they can do that. To help their case against you, they already want to bring, they adopt a new reg that tries to cover you for providing the protocol rather than actually operating an exchange. Whether that will be successful, I don't know, but that's probably what we'll see the SEC try to do.
This new reg effectively says it's not just important that you maybe operate day-to-day, maintain this platform. It's also important that you created it as well.
It was designed to capture DeFi protocols. It was designed to counter the argument they make that we don't actually operate. we don't buy and sell securities like an exchange does. We don't run a order book the way exchanges do. We just provide a protocol that can be used to create liquidity pools, and people come in and create their own liquidity pools if they want to. This new language was designed to capture that. Whether it will stand, whether it will hold up in court, you know, I don't know. But that was what the SEC was attempting to do there.
Walk through the process maybe for listeners who are super involved in the world of DeFi. You know, maybe they trade on Uniswap and they're a little nervous or don't know exactly what to expect. How often does a Wells notice then translate or result in something more meaningful? And do you think that, you know, obviously this is a long process, but as they, you know, discover, you know, sift through things, will they come out of the other side with a case?
Normally, in a normal world, under a normal chairman, the Wells notice process, I'm going to be direct here. Wells notice process is, you know, two-thirds, 70, 80% of the time results in an action, but sometimes you can talk them out of it. And usually you can convince the SEC to narrow the range of claims that they will bring against you as part of the Wells process. It's sort of the beginning of a negotiation that eventually leads to settlement, because most cases settle. But because it's crypto and because it's Gary, nothing will change. And probably what I would tell Uniswap's lawyers is, I wouldn't even go talk to the SEC in any substantive way, because you won't get anything out of it. There's nothing good that can come from that.
So what do they? So there's nothing they can really do except for what would the course of action be then?
It is prepare for war. Mm-hmm. It is Uniswap's going to hire a team of experts. They're going to hire a team of lawyers. They're going to probably have expert witnesses, the same way Ripple had. Probably similar types of witnesses to speak to questions about the definition of an exchange, what it means to operate an exchange, how the protocol works, stuff like that. And then they will start the filing process. They'll have demands for interrogatory questions and answers. They will submit expert reports. They'll have motions for summary judgment. They'll depose their experts. They'll depose individuals who operate the protocol. They won't be able to depose everybody because they don't know who many of the liquidity providers are. For all I know, you and I are some of the biggest liquidity providers on Uniswap. Mm-hmm. But they'll depose people at Uniswap Labs and depose the experts, and then eventually move to trial.
Does it matter if there was one token that maybe was a security trading on Uniswap for their case?
The SEC will need to demonstrate that, to demonstrate a claim that they're acting as an unlicensed broker or an unlicensed exchange. I don't think they'll have a tough time doing that just because of the way things have gone so far with the Terra case and with the Coinbase case. So I don't think USDC will have a tough time winning that argument at district court level. I hope that we'll constrain the Howey test at the Supreme Court eventually. I hope for that. I will fight for that. I will join the fight for that. And I think we have a good chance of that. But for now, at the district court level, in the Second Circuit, in the Southern District of New York, where the SEC will probably bring this case, I think they'll have an easy time demonstrating that some security traded on Uniswap. But the real, I think the defense that Uniswap can bring is really, we're not operating as an exchange. We're not a broker-dealer. Because of the way this works, it is actually decentralized. The SEC might also try to claim that UNI is a security, and there were sales of UNI that were sales of securities, and that won't threaten the protocol itself because the UNI token is basically a meme coin, right? It doesn't really have any significance. It's a governance token, but the governance is advisory. It has a fee switch, but the fee switch has never been turned on. So I think that question is less important to the core question of, are they operating an exchange? And there's a lot of momentum for Uniswap from that class action dismissal that I think will help them out.
One of the interesting arguments that I think is made in our space, it's like you haven't really given us an opportunity to show us which of these are securities or not. Which the chair has gleefully responded, there's already guidance out there. That's basically the answers. And we've talked about this on the show back when you were on in August, which is the sort of DAO guidance that was given back in 2017. Do you ever talk to folks about why that's not enough or how frustrating that must be to get that response?
Oh, sure. And I've talked to folks that go in to CorpFin who have extensive discussions about this is what a regime for disclosure would look like. This is the exemptive relief we need. A number of folks in DeFi have gone to try to present. And some of the line level staff in CorpFin have interesting conversations. And then there's crickets. Because the tone at the top, the chairman has said, we can't be seen politically as pro-crypto. So we're not going to do any of that. It's a fair argument. I don't think it's going to help you much in court, but it's absolutely a fair argument. We'll see where Coinbase goes with their mandamus suit, where they require the SEC to respond to the request for rulemaking. And the SEC's response is, we're not going to do any rulemaking.
Didn't the SEC ask to dismiss that as well?
They did, but it's still ongoing.
I see.
It's still ongoing. I don't know what the final end game is with that. I presume it's meant to help their actual enforcement case in some way. But it's not over. It's not over yet.
Well, that would be interesting to see, like, the extent to which the SEC has just been, we see it in a bit of an intangible anecdotal way, but it'd be nice to see some actual tangible evidence of that, of them just being very unwilling to just engage or cooperate. And this is so new, right? I mean, this is so bizarre for folks who maybe come from traditional financial services where, you have a rule and industry comments and they weigh, and go over the details and come to something that's a bit that works. But this isn't just, it's not even really just a crypto thing, right? This entire administration, I think, has, even from folks trading, from the securities world, has just kind of gone on a sort of rampage, whether it's against hedge funds or private equity, different types of rulemaking that they've implemented without, counter to what, industry folks think is reasonable, which is, I guess, the legacy of the chair is what, I think it's fair and reasonable to say that he's taken quite an aggressive approach.
So let me give you an example of what you're talking about. So I just worked on a case that just came to resolution, And the case involved gold coins. So people who sold gold and silver coins, real coins. And they had clients, and they told their clients, a lot of whom were investors in through the federal retirement program. They said, you know, now that you can do self-directed IRAs, you should consider diversifying into some gold and silver coins that you can hold in your hand, hard metal, to hedge against inflation historically. And that's it. They sold gold coins and silver coins. And the SEC said, oh, you're selling securities. They're selling coins. They're like, Coinbase's argument made kind of poked fun at the SEC for their position would encompass Beanie Babies and baseball cards and collectibles. And that was supposed to be like a kind of an argumentum ad absurdum. But now they're actually going after coins. Are baseball card sellers next? Are they going after baseball cards next and saying that's an unregistered sale of securities? It borders on the absurd.
What is the underpinning philosophy here? Is it consumer protection? Is there any sort of data or indication that consumers are getting fleeced to a scale that requires such a aggressive stance?
Well, the thing is, people are getting fleeced in crypto, as we know, but the SEC is not going after the fleecers.
Yeah.
They're going after the good guys. They're going after the good actors.
What does this mean for the industry? Is this just a, you know, part of the story of offshoring, moving out of the United States, and then the election's coming up? If there's a different president, to what extent does that impact the crypto environment with the SEC? Does that problem just go away to an extent? I've always wondered that with some of these lawsuits. Like, theoretically, the new chair can just stop.
So people are, you know, there's, you never know how to predict Trump, right? Don't predict Trump because that's not predictable. But he had a team last time, financial regulatory team. So probably the most reasonable thing you can predict is that they're going to get the band back together. So some people are talking about maybe Brian Brooks for SEC chairman. Now, if Brian Brooks becomes chairman of the SEC, we're going to work all of this stuff out. And, you know, I could see some kind of a resolution where they create some path for Coinbase that involves some sort of platform, some sort of use of the special purpose broker dealer thing that never really went anywhere because Gary came in and decided not to give it to anyone. I think Kraken's application for that is still pending for 5 years. A viable registration path or a viable private offering path for crypto that's kind of a Reg D but with a crypto twist, and a viable exchange registration path. This is all possible. The SEC has exemptive authority to do all of that. And there's already kind of model frameworks for that that folks have written up and sent into the commission, sitting on the shelf over there. We could fix this in 6 months.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that that's often overlooked is the fact that the SEC has within its authority the, and whether they'd get it right or get it wrong or if it would be messy or not, but they have the authority to say, here is this third way for how to register as a crypto exchange and be compliant.
You could find the 20 or 30 best, you know, lawyers, people that have come on your show and that have made the rounds, kind of usual suspects in crypto law, Gabe Shapiro, Lewis Cohen, those kind of guys. You can get a couple dozen of them, put them in a room, and in a month, they could figure the whole thing out.
We'll wait and see. We'll wait and see how the election plays out until we get into all that. But what shall we leave listeners with as they go into the weekend and maybe want to carve out a few moments to think about crypto policy and law?
You should be worried about this stuff, but you should really be scared of some other cases in crypto. The Tornado Cash case is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
They just convicted Roman Sterling off for they said he ran the Bitcoin fog mixer. I worked on the case. I sat for 30 hours with the kid in prison. I don't believe he ran it at all. I believe he was a significant user of Bitcoin Fog to get some privacy, but I don't think he ran it. But he's looking down the barrel of maybe 50 years in prison.
Wow.
In Florida, they just convicted a guy as an unlicensed money transmitter. They gave him 5 years. Or maybe he's settled, but anyway, he's getting 5 years for unlicensed money transmitter. He used local Bitcoin a lot, moved a couple million dollars on local Bitcoin. He says he's just a speculator, and that was supplied for him. He wanted to use. He wanted to do peer-to-peer transactions. They happen to be large enough. The government said, no, we think you're a money transmitter. We think you're Western Union, so you're going for 5 years. Just for being a whale who buys and sells Bitcoin peer-to-peer. That's it. That's scary stuff, man. And that's a threat to the dream of permissionless, decentralized peer-to-peer money.
It's scary stuff indeed. Sir, thanks so much for dropping by.
All right. We'll do another one to celebrate when we win all this stuff in the courts. So.
Absolutely. I mean, that's going to be exciting. I need to get into a courtroom one of these days. I've missed so many of the fun ones over the past few years, despite being so close, being in New York and then living so close to New York. I don't know why it hasn't happened yet.
It sounds like Laura was getting up at like 4 a.m. for SBF, though. You know, you got to get in line early. It's like,
yeah, that's a bit too ambitious for me.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming.
All right, man. Thank you. Mm-hmm.